Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The podcast series by A3 Communications, the data storage industry PR agency. My name is Fred Monson, and I'm A3 Communications founder and CEO.
In the guest chair today, we have someone I have known for nearly 20 years, and that I think many of you have come across too. John Torr, CMO at Cloudian. Hi, John. How are you?
I am just great, Fred. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on our podcast. So we first worked together when you were at OnStore, which got acquired by LSI. Today, you head up marketing for Cloudian, where you've been for just over 7 years. And along the way, you also spent time at Oracle following the acquisition of Zego, where you also ran marketing, which is also another company we work together at. So your experience covers both smaller and larger organizations, but how did you start out in marketing and what attracted you to this side of the tech industry? And also, what came first for you? Was it the marketing or the product side?
Actually, it was neither. I started out in engineering. So I did engineering for 6 years and went to business school. And then after business school, started in marketing on the product side. And after doing that for about 5 years, moved into the outbound side. So really, it's been a mix of everything.
I know. And that's I think that is often what gives people like you the edge. And that's how you have the skills to become a CMO, because I've never come across a CMO who is not technical. You have lots of vice presidents of marketing who can just have the marketing side of things. But I think, I don't know, is that a requisite to actually be technical if you want to be a CMO?
I don't think it's a requisite, but it certainly helps, because you know, we are selling a very technical product to a technical audience, right? We're talking to an audience that has problems to solve that require technology, and they have to have a deep understanding of that technology to be confident that it really is a solution to their problem. So, you know, I think having the technical background helps me to understand where they're coming from, how to explain it to them in a way that makes sense, and help them link the technology to the problem that they're trying to solve.
Sure, but I guess even with Cloudian, at some point you must find yourself in a situation where you're trying to sell to someone who's not particularly technical, be it because of the role they hold in their organization, or because they've maybe just switched industry. And I believe you must find yourself in situations where you have to try and take the technical side out of it in a way and explain more about the benefits rather than the features, right?
Absolutely. We always have to sell the benefits, you know, talk about how it's going to solve a problem for them. And matter of fact, that's what we're primarily doing at the marketing level. When we get engaged with the customer and have those deeper conversations, that's when we're getting into the real nuts and bolts, you know, the speeds and feeds. But the initial conversation is, hey, let's talk about the problem you're trying to solve and link that with the solution that we offer. And really having that, you know, that linkage is where that technical knowledge comes in. But yeah, at the marketing level, we're not talking speeds and feeds. You know, we're talking, what's your issue? How can we help solve it? And let me give you a flavor of how we do that. More to come.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I'm obviously not technical. I'm on the comms side, but you often find that if you look at different companies that offer similar products, to someone on the outside, those products look exactly the same. It's a case of, how do I find out which one best suits my needs, my environment, and my requirements? And I think that's where communications, PR, marketing can really help. And that's where sometimes when I speak to startups, that's what they don't necessarily understand. They want to go out and talk about the product. And no one wants to talk about your product. They want to talk about their problems and how you can help them address them, right? They don't care about what you sell. They want to know if you can help them, right?
Exactly. And that's what we do a lot in our communications, is talking about the issues that our customers are having and really doing it in a variety of ways. So absolutely, we're using press releases, we're using contributed articles, all that, you know, a lot of blog posts. But we also are increasingly relying on social media because it gives us the opportunity to have a personality as well. And ultimately, it's going to be, you know, people dealing with people, and we want to give the customer confidence that, hey, you know, we understand you as a customer. We understand you and your problems. We have a personality ourselves. We hope you'll find you like to work with, and we are going to engage in a conversation with you through whatever means we can, and that may be social media, you know, that may be face-to-face at a trade show. And that's just a prelude to having a conversation in real life that, you know, we can get together and go into more depth.
So two questions now. First one, which social medias do you find work best in our industry, in the data storage industry?
It's primarily LinkedIn. That's the professional, you know, networking environment, and we find our customers are all there. They all refer to it daily. We've seen tremendous engagement on our LinkedIn posts. So we watch the metrics very carefully. We see what works. We see what doesn't work. And we do a lot of different stuff. We try to engage with the customers in a variety of different ways. We also use Twitter, have in the past, or X if you prefer. Facebook, not so much.
No.
And, you know, we've kind of tried everything. We do YouTube, but it's primarily as a destination, you know, where we're pointing people to, as opposed to someplace where they find us. But where they find us mostly today is LinkedIn.
Yes, I totally agree. I think Facebook is very much a consumer thing, and Twitter or X, I have no idea what's going on there. It seems that people are just leaving it, which is a shame, because a lot of companies have invested a lot of time and money. My other question is about trade shows. Are you guys still going to trade shows? Have they changed since the pandemic? Because I remember our calendars were full of trade shows, and now it seems they aren't. What are you seeing?
There certainly are fewer of them than there used to be. We still absolutely go. We'll definitely be at major events with our partners like AWS and Veeam and HPE, and we do find them very effective. It's still a great way to engage in a conversation with your customer and build some confidence pretty quickly, because, you know, they can come to your booth, they can see that you actually have a physical presence, they can meet some people, you know, build some confidence that, you know, this is a company that I can work with. So yes, we still love trade shows, but there definitely are fewer of them. And obviously, COVID really dragged that whole industry to a halt, and it's been building back up. And frankly, I would love to see more of it, because I think having that face-to-face communication is the fastest way of building confidence with a customer. But you know, as you say, there just are fewer of them. But they're coming back, so we'll see.
Absolutely. In a way, I do miss going to trade shows a bit. We've got our own, not trade show, but event, Technology Live. It's just one day, but it's so nice to see people in person, have a bit of a chat, you know. It's because at the end of the day, we are always the same people. Over the past 20 years, I've met so many people in our industry, and they change company, but it's always the same people. So it's actually quite nice to see them in person every now and again, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. From a networking standpoint, it's terrific. Obviously, when we're going to trade shows, we're primarily interested in meeting people we've never met before, and that's my job, is to bring in new customers, and that face-to-face communication and building that impression that's positive with the customer. You know, we got a smiling face, we got a professional appearance. That really creates the foundation for a follow-on conversation. You know, back when we were doing trade shows on a regular basis, and, you know, had a little bit of a machine in terms of our follow-up, you know, we would call people on the phone after a show, and we'd say, hey, you know, remember us? We were the guys in the green shirts. And nine times out of 10, the guy would go, oh yeah, the guys in the green shirts, I remember you. And then the conversation flows from there. So that face-to-face communication was a catalyst that really kickstarted a conversation and got it going faster. And you can still do the same thing, you know, through social media, through you know, electronic-based marketing, it just takes longer.
It takes much longer to establish that
communication path.
Absolutely. So as a CMO, John, you have obviously that very desirable blend of marketing skills and technical knowledge. Would you say this has helped you shape the brands you've built, the reputations of the companies you've worked with to date? Has that made a difference than if you didn't have the technical knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, it gets back to, we've got to be able to link that solution to the, we've got to be able to link the technology to the problem. And object storage is a great example of that, because if you look at object storage, I mean, it is a different technology than traditional file storage. But frankly, you know, does anyone really care about the fact that it's a different technology? And I'll give you one, you know, real simple example of where that played a difference. Object storage was actually originally created to be immutable storage. That was the original use case that EMC launched object storage with Lowe's many years ago. It was a product that was designed for healthcare files, you know, where you didn't want that file to ever be changeable. And you know, that was an interesting solution, but it had a fairly narrow audience. But ultimately, when ransomware started coming along and becoming a big deal, that same technology, that immutability, the fact that you can make data unchangeable, became a huge benefit in protecting data from ransomware. Because all of a sudden, the fact that you couldn't encrypt the data, you know, a hacker couldn't get into your system and encrypt the data, that made a huge difference. So all of a sudden, this technology that had kind of been there for 30 years, all of a sudden made a big difference. And in the era of COVID, that was actually one of our leading value propositions, because in COVID, ransomware really took off. The fact that we could protect our data from ransomware made a huge difference, but it was communicating a technology that had been around for a long, long time, but in the context of a new problem. And well, a growing problem, and that growing problem, ransomware, really created a demand for it. So it was a combination of tying together, you know, that technical knowledge of what's going on underneath the hood, but with a, you know, applying it to a solution to a problem that really became pervasive. And it was a, you know, it still is a very strong message for us, and it's a strong message for object storage overall, because it was really a problem that object storage was designed to solve. It just happened to take 30 years for that problem to become something that everyone had.
Absolutely. And that's a problem that a lot happens to a lot of technologies. But so we talked about trade shows. We talked about social media. What do you focus on today to build Cloudian's brand? Is it mostly PR, marketing? Is it a bit of everything? Is there something that you particularly focus on where the most of your time and budget goes?
Well, yeah, we have a great sales team, and it's really all about how do we facilitate customer interactions for that team, right? How do we build a relationship with a customer such that customer engages with that sales team and then, you know, take the sales process to the next level? So really, it's whatever is going to facilitate that. So it's a combination of social media where we're engaging people. We always try to get people to come to our website. We've got 100 different ways of collecting, you know, contact information from people who are interested. You know, we use live chat. We offer free trials. We offer services where you can get a, you know, quote online for our product. So really trying to get people to engage in whatever way they feel comfortable and lead it down the path of getting towards a sales interaction. So it varies from customer to customer. We obviously still use face-to-face, you know, we are still doing trade shows, but whatever, you know, gets that customer to engage in a conversation with us, we try to push that process along to lead it towards a sales conversation.
So if you've got such a mix of communications disciplines that you rely on, what would you say is the one thing you must do to be successful in tech communications and PR? If you've got all these tools at your disposal, is there something or?
Yeah, it's understanding the problem you solve. You know, ultimately it comes back to communicating a solution to a problem. And going back to my ransomware example, you know, 2 years ago, that was a very big thing. Today, a very big issue is data sovereignty. And this really, you know, how do we find this out? Well, this really comes from listening to our customers and listening to what issues they're facing. And then we take that and we amplify it. So 2 years ago, the issue they were facing with ransomware. Today, we're seeing a lot of concerns around data sovereignty. You know, people are obviously using the cloud for a lot of their work, if not the majority of it, but not all of it, because data sovereignty is a very real concern, particularly in EMEA and in APAC. You know, less so in America, because the cloud companies are, you know, American.
Yes.
In APAC and EMEA, data sovereignty is a big issue. So, you know, we talk about that a lot. You know, we talk about security a lot beyond just ransomware, because, you know, you want to have your data being accessible to your audience, to your users, in a cloud-like environment, but it's got to be secure. So we talk about security a lot, and these things come out of listening to our customers, listening to what issues they're facing, and then we amplify those messages through the different media, so social media, through our websites. As an example, you know, one thing we're seeing right now is, the file and object markets have converged, and you know, this has been happening for a while, but AI is emerging as a big driver of that. And the reason is because a lot of the AI applications are being run in the cloud, so they are, you know, they're designed for using cloud storage, which is object storage. But a lot of the data that people are going to be using in their training models is file-based data. So these two worlds are coming together in the AI space, and you know, we're perfectly positioned for that because we have a solution that combines file and object in one. So one thing we can talk to our customers about in terms of solving that problem is, hey, I've got data I want to be able to use in both realms. I've got legacy apps and I've got modern apps. How can you help me use all my data? Well, we do that with a technology that's called bimodal data access, where you can access all of your information as either objects or files. A pretty, you know, technical sounding value proposition. But when you tell the customer that, you say, hey, now you can use all of your data for your training models, whether that data is object-based or file-based, it can all work with your training models and it can all work with your legacy applications, which increases the value of that data you have. That's something customers are really concerned about right now, because they're thinking about building their own models, that they know that model is going to be their crown jewel. The more data they have to work with, the better. Well, we give them access to everything. So as these things move forward, the technology problems evolve, and our solution and our messaging also evolves to, you know, encompass what customers are thinking about today.
See, and what I find interesting about what you've just said is that you haven't just given me an answer that focuses on the sales side of things or on the marketing or on the technology. It encompasses everything. So how do you make sure internally at Cloudian, or when you were on Soil, how do you make sure that your sales, your engineering and your marketing teams support each other, that they come together to agree, for example, on when to launch a product or how to pitch it in particular, because they may have different agendas and they're three very important parts of the company. How do you make sure they all work together and agree on a strategy when you're going out with a new piece of technology?
Yeah, well certainly you obviously can sometimes feel like dogs and cats living together. So that's there can be some friction, but ultimately it comes back to the customer. You know, ultimately it comes back to serving the needs of the customer. And we are trying to do the same thing. We may go about it in different ways, and we have to, you know, talk about that and resolve the differences. But the unifying element is the customer, right? Addressing the problem the customer has today and thinking about the problem the customer is going to have tomorrow, right? And that's really where the issue comes in, is we've got a lot to do in both. You know, we know that the customer has got challenges. He's he's working with right now, right? He's trying to address ransomware. He's trying to address security. He needs to scale. Our customers are scaling our solution in big, big ways these days. And, you know, that's great. That's exactly what we want. But, you know, we have to continue to address, you know, how we make that scalability easy. And at the same time, you know, he wants more, you know, thinking forward, thinking towards, hey, how do I bring AI into my storage environment? You know, how do I make my whole, you know, IT infrastructure self-managing? You know, so that's a forward-looking thing. And we have to balance those two priorities. And that's a tough conversation, but ultimately it comes back to, you know, prioritizing what the customer needs and making sure we're keeping, you know, keeping him as happy as absolutely possible. That is the unifying message that brings, you know, sales, marketing, and engineering all together.
Absolutely. And in order to reach customers, well, I know Cloudian is a channel-based company, right? You work with resellers, distributors. How do you attract them? How do you win the channel through messaging and positioning as, let's say, a smaller vendor? How do you attract them to make sure they want to work with you and not, say, a bigger company?
Yeah, it actually varies a little bit between North America and EMEA. I think in EMEA, you know, the channel is very much an extension of your sales force. You know, they're used to selling pretty much independently, and you know, it's really enabling them with and training them, you know, and helping them understand what problems you solve for your customer. In North America, it's a little bit more about you know, helping the customer go to them. Right, they are going to be they're primarily working for the customer. They're going to fulfill the needs of the customer in whatever way the customer thinks is best. So you've really got to convince the customer that, you know, your product is something he wants to engage with, and then the channel partner is going to you know, provide the services and that interface between yourself and the customer that will facilitate that transaction and the aftermarket service. Mm-hmm. So it kind of varies a little bit between the two regions. But ultimately, it comes back to you got to have something that really appeals to the end user. You got to have a story about how you're solving a problem, and in both regions, that is ultimately the thing that wins the day. So yeah, we definitely treat the channel partner like our sales force. You know, train them, incent them, you know, help them with leads, help them, you know, have conversations with customers. You know, we do all the same kinds of things we do with our own salespeople. We do with channel partners, ultimately that helps them to see the success. You know, once they see the success, once they see that, you know, sales are happening, they're making money with our product. You know, customers are happy. That ultimately is the thing that primes the pump and keeps them, you know, coming back for more. But you know, they're in exactly the same boat we are. They're ultimately trying to serve the needs of that end user. Ultimately, if we have a story that appeals to that end user, it's going to appeal to the folks in the middle as well.
So you mentioned that the channel is slightly different in the US versus Europe, EMEA, which is an excellent point. I mean, a lot of companies, especially when they start and they move from the US into Europe, they go down the channel route because it's a much quicker and more cost-effective way to get your sales going than if you were to put feet on the ground, sufficient feet on the ground to get a presence. From a PR and marketing point of view, what differences have you witnessed between the two regions?
Yeah, you know, it is different and from a PR and marketing standpoint as well. In North America, because a lot of the vendors are here and the customers are and the partners are kind of, you know, overwhelmed with the noise from all the different vendors, it can be challenging to break through, right? You have to make more noise and be a little bit more bombastic to break through in the North American market. That is not an approach that necessarily plays well in the EMEA market. You know, you need to be, you know, a little more careful about, you know, the tone
Yes. Well, they say in the US they buy because they're excited. In Europe, they buy because they're convinced. I think that is very true, right?
Right.
So
we do get in trouble with sometimes, you know, being a little bit, you know, bombastic in North America, and then EMEA, it doesn't play well. So we try to you know, thread that needle as best we can. But ultimately, you know, the underlying message is the same. You've got to solve a problem, but the way you talk about it, you may get a little more hyperbolic in the US market than the EMEA market would really want to hear.
Absolutely. And something that we often say to startups that we speak to is, in Europe, you've got to see people in person much more than you do in the US. In the US, you can do things online or over the phone, Zoom, whatever, you know, webinars. In Europe, we still like to see people in person at least a couple of times a year. So I always say to people, don't come and do PR here if you're not going to commit to come down at least once or twice a year, because all that commitment that you speak of, people won't believe it, because you're telling them that Europe is this big, important region, and then you can't even take a couple of days for the CEO, the CMO to come over and talk to your customers. So that's I found that's a big difference between Europe and
we have a substantial EMEA sales team. They are working with our partners all the time, face to face. We have an annual partner conference in DOC that really well attended. So absolutely, that face to face communication is critical, and our EMEA team is all over it 24/7.
Excellent. So you said you have this event in DOC. Do you have it in other regions as well, or just in DOC? And if so,
we do, but we have a large concentration of partners in the DOC area. So that's where the event is held. But we absolutely meet face to face with partners all over EMEA regularly.
Do you find that the DOC region is a bigger market for you guys? I mean, it is.
Absolutely. We some of our customers include some of the largest automakers, mm-hmm. some of the largest banks, and these are customers that are obviously very demanding. You know, they have a lot of history, in technologies like ours. So they really know what they're doing. And they know what tough questions to ask, and because of the scale, they push the product hard. So the DOC is a very important region for us, as is Benelux, as is UKI, but DOC is definitely one of the leading regions for us.
And it doesn't come as a surprise, to be honest. So Cloudian today, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's highly focused on object storage, right? But technology evolves all the time, and companies, to stay competitive, need to evolve with technology. What's the next big trend, you think, in object storage and the related technologies, in your opinion? What's the next big thing coming up?
Well, the next big thing is really the evolution into a true hybrid cloud infrastructure, and by that I mean, when we get to the point where on-prem and cloud are really just two sides of the same coin. Now, you say, people are really drawn to cloud, and they are. That's absolutely where the majority of new applications are being developed today. But what we've seen over time in IT is that ultimately, everything flows everywhere, right? When as soon technology ultimately flows into every nook and cranny of the organization. So you will have, we're already working with AWS on Outposts, which is their remote instance of running EC2. We're also working with AWS on Local Zones, which is their small, it's kind of, think of it as a mini region that operates in areas where they don't have a AWS region. And then we're also working with customers on running modern applications in their own data centers. So what's happening is that technology of cloud, we think of ourselves as being cloud-like because we operate the same way as cloud, but you can put us wherever you want. You can put us next to your outposts. You can put us in a local zone. You can put us in your own data center. And that's what happens with technology, is ultimately it flows everywhere. Most applications today are being developed as modern applications. And what that means is that they're being developed to use the S3 storage infrastructure as their primary storage type. That's new applications. But of course, there's tons and tons and tons of old applications, you know, legacy apps that still exist. And ultimately, those are going to become cloudified as well. And what happens over time is that, you know, that way of doing things becomes pervasive. You know, we saw this in the transition from mainframes into mini computers and then into microcomputers. That exact same thing happened. You know, microcomputers started out on the fringe. They grew to become a larger part of the overall IT infrastructure, and then finally they took over everything. Well, that's the same thing that's going to happen with cloud-like technologies. So we see, you know, that evolution of file into object. Right now, the two of them are merging because the two worlds are coming together. And ultimately, you know, object will become the dominant over time. And it really is based on this idea, not just of being an object storage technology, but of being cloud-like in everything you do. And that means highly scalable. That means highly secure. That means the ability to transverse, you know, huge, you know, spans of distance in a single system. All of these things come together to create what we think of as being cloud-like. And that way of doing things is just going to be, you know, 10 years from now, the way everything is done. So that's the big thing. Of course, it's not a overnight transition. It's a long-term flow. That it's really what Cloudian was built for. It's in the name. putting this cloud-like technology anywhere you need it. And right now, you know, we're really excited to be working with, you know, AWS to help facilitate that in their efforts in this technology. And we're working with our customers on, you know, running modern apps and also file-based apps together in their environments and making those two data types interchangeable. A lot of different little things coming together, but they're all going towards that ultimate end of making the cloud pervasive.
So it's obviously that technology evolves, right? But I remember at a conference hearing someone saying that today it's really difficult to develop something that's groundbreaking in data storage, because it's just a case of coming up with something that does something differently, but it's a similar technology. Do you think that today, is it harder or easier for a startup to stand out than it was, say, 10 years ago?
Storage has always been a little bit tough because it's not really, really fast moving, right? There have been some transitions. You know, the transition towards Flash certainly created a fast moving ripple because Flash costs came down so fast. So that created some opportunities to create, you know, a pretty fast moving transition that people have capitalized on. And we're also working hard on Flash. We've got some great Flash technologies that we worked on with Micron and AMD. But yes, if there is a transition that occurs that is fast moving, you can absolutely create a transition and excitement. But in general, yes, storage tends to be a little bit slower moving. we're driven by the use cases, right? I mean, we're driven by what the customers, what their applications require and what problems they're having. And those problems can be fairly, you know, slow to evolve. Ransomware was one that came along, you know, grew pretty rapidly during COVID. We capitalized on that with our technologies around immutability. Another, you know, problem with people having right now is data sovereignty, because as people are, you know, using the cloud more and more, we're seeing more and more regions around the world become sensitive to the fact that they really want to have sensitive data staying within their countries. Vietnam, for example, is an area where they've just passed some new data sovereignty laws that really keep data that has PII locked within that country. Same thing in India. You know, a billion people now have new data sovereignty laws that keep that data locked within the confines of their country. So these are fairly new things and fast moving. So yes, if you've got a technology that addresses a problem, which is cropping up, or you address a technology that where, you know, the cost metrics are changing fairly rapidly, flash prices drop like a rock, which really made a big difference. You know, yes, you can absolutely make a splash more quickly.
That's interesting. But so technology is certainly evolving quickly, but so is communications, right? PR and marketing. I'm thinking about chat, GPT, AI, the tools that we use today, even just social media, are so different from what they were, say, 20 years ago. How do you think the communications disciplines will continue to evolve? Because as a CMO, you're always looking for the next way to get in touch with your target customers. How do you think we will change the industry, the communications industry will change moving forward?
Well, definitely. We're big fans of ChatGPT. We use it in our marketing work, and we see it really as a tool, right? It's another lever to improve our productivity and our effectiveness. You know, just like the word processor was a tool to make, you know, writing easier, ChatGPT is a tool to make be an idea generator, right? So we use ChatGPT to say, you know, give us 20 taglines around something, or you know, write up 20 social media posts, and we don't use them all. We then go through and pick the three or four that sound best. But it's a tool, right? It's a creativity lever, and we will absolutely use it as a way of generating ideas. But ultimately, it comes down to the people to pick the ideas, refine the ideas, communicate the ideas, have conversations like we're having right now. You know, I haven't been replaced in podcasts yet, but
not yet. Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully that will not happen. I quite enjoy these chats I have with you and your peers. I seriously hope they won't become obsolete like a lot of other things have become, and the way X will probably end up if it carries on going the way it seems to be going.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, it's all the same thing, right? We are people selling to people, right? We are people, you know, communicating with our target audience, and those are people who have, you know, real decisions to make that they are betting their careers on, right? We know what we're doing is extremely serious business. The ramifications of their decisions are huge. We've got to convince our audience that we are the people they want to work with. And ultimately, that comes down to people communications.
Absolutely. Agreed. Right. This brings us to the end of this episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are? Thank you for joining us today, John. A reminder for our listeners that you can find the list of podcasts in this series at a3communicationspr.com. I'm Fred Monson. Thank you for listening, and see you in our next episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are?